Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm going to put in the risk and the effort to entertain us in this situation. Thank you for that. Who am I to make stupid comments? So that's going to be the Joe Fortenball approach moving forward, right up until there's a really good joke waiting there, and then I'm going to make right. the joke and then probably right. repent and pretend like this conversation never happened. But that's where I'm coming from, Lo. And as a former athlete, you could probably appreciate that, right? I'm not saying absolutely. Give me a medal, but I mean, no, you know, it's probably the approach.
We'll call you Joey High Road from now on.
I like that. Let's do it, Dibs. Let's call him Joey High Road. I like it.
I haven't actually done it yet.
You just said
Google map the high road. He knows how to get to the high road. Let's see if he actually takes the high road.
Well, if he said it, sometimes you speak it, it comes into existence. That's faith. It's a substance of things hoped for and evidence of things not seen. So you spoke it, Joe. So, amen. Hallelujah. I think you look at the 76ers, you look at the Heat, Toronto, you know, you look at Boston, you look at Milwaukee. These teams are going to go out there to compete. You got to realize that you look, you're talking about Houston, Dallas, Denver, Lakers, Clippers, all those teams are going to compete. And I think there's some other teams. I know Dibs is, you know, given that number. And maybe when things get tough, Dibs, maybe they hightail it. But I think I like to think that there's going to be guys out there competing a little harder than what you're alluding to. I think that I would say 90 or 85% of the guys don't want to be there. That I agree with you there. Maybe the number's even higher. But far as competing, your name's on it. You'll see, Joe. You're going to have a lot more respect than what Dibs is giving credit for, because these guys are going to go out there and they're going to compete, and they're going to compete at a high level. Their name's on it. You can go to a gym, and Dibs, you've been there. Look at me and you. We're just freaking farting around, playing two old guys, can't play to save our life. But look how we were out there competing. Just something about our pride. You get out there, you say, I don't really want to do this. No, you didn't want to do it. They talked us into doing it. Okay. When it became reality, it's okay. We got to go do it. And your pride won't let you quit. You've been out there playing tennis or volleyball and doing with your kids, Dibs. And you're like, you know what? Forget this. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, you know, your son challenges. Okay. Oh, you playing you in golf. You're like, oh, I'm playing around. And all of a sudden you're like, you want me to get serious? That's the thing, Dibs. I get what you're saying.
Low, hang tight 1 second. Listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, radio.com, sports station. Not today, FCC.
Not today.
Go ahead, Lo. Go ahead.
Not
get
today,
back
FCC. Not Woo. Today, FCC. Woo. You were smooth with that, Joe. You said, Lo, hang on 1 second. And boom, and then you got it. I mean, just like me, I'm jumping back to that, just like I digest again. I think, Dibs, that you got to give these guys more credit than what you are. I think you understand they don't want to be there, but once you walk out on that court and somebody throws the ball down on you, taking you to the hole, just the competitive edge. You used to bite guys, fight guys, scratch guys, undercut guys when you used to play basketball with those teams and you weren't any good, but you would scratch and crawl and fight because you didn't want to be the weak link. You forced yourself to play, Dibs. So you rose up. You rose up and you fought out there, little fella. You scrapped.
Thank you, Lo. First of all, I never undercut anybody. Now, scratching and clawing and biting, absolutely. But never, never would I ever undercut anyone. That is just reckless.
You're right.
Dangerous. I'll never forget when Steve Kenilworth got undercut in the 82 state championship game with my brother's high school team leading Banning. Kenilworth had to go to the bench. Banning rallied. Fortunately, Drake was able to win 87-85, but I digest. You look at Washington, Lo, 24-40 on the year. They didn't compete during the regular season, over 64 games. I don't see how Washington's going to go into a bubble and say, you know what, guys? We're only 5.5 out of the 8 seed. Let's rally up. Washington can go 6-2 in this restart and still not be close enough to make the playoffs. And I think,
but is that competing if they go 6-2, though, Coach? Answer that,
yes,
coach.
But they're not going to go 6-2, coach. They went 24-40 in the regular year. They wanted a 37% clip. You're sending terrible teams to the bubble. Spoiler alert, bad teams aren't going to suddenly be good because you gave them 4 months off.
I don't know. There's some variance there. You're taking away home court advantage for a lot of these teams. That really hurts a team like Milwaukee. It hurts a team like the Lakers, especially if they have to go head-to-head with the Clippers, because that would have taken place at Staples. But you know that city is overwhelmingly supporting LeBron and the Lakers over Kawhi and the Clippers. I think there's opportunity for the unknown. The 60-game baseball season gives us opportunity for the unknown. Play some long shots. I think you can also play some long shots in the NBA. The difference is whether or not the bad teams have a chance versus whether or not they put in the effort. If the bad teams put in the effort, if the Kings go down there and try, I'll stand and applaud. I'll stand and applaud. And if you don't make it, that's okay. Thank you for going down there and entertaining me. I never say that to any athletes or any teams during the normal regular seasons because I take all this stuff for granted. The NFL is expected to be on Sundays. You better entertain me. And if you don't play perfect or you cost me money, I'm going to criticize you on social media. I'm going to criticize you in person, on the radio, on TV. Everywhere I can blow you up, I'm going to blow you up. Now, that's not the case. I'm so desperate to see some of this stuff. Those guys who are out there trying, the teams that are really going to put in the effort, I'm applauding. I'm absolutely applauding. I just want to watch some basketball, and I'd love to watch some baseball as well. I have no idea how this stuff's going to play out, but it's been so long. I'd love to get my attention away from what I normally see on Twitter. Twitter, you pop into Twitter these days, I can't even stand 90 seconds. I'm barely even tweeting these days. I pop in just because I want to see what's going on in the sports world. There's something we can talk about here, and you end up getting crop dusted with everything. Politics and wars and bounties, right, right, and global warming and coronavirus, and this state's doing this and this state's doing that, and then these media members are fighting each other over this, and this company's trying to overtake that company and cancel culture's out for everybody. And it's like, ugh, taking 5 showers a day. You got to go bathe every time you get done going on Twitter or Facebook these days. So you're going down there, you're willing to play hoops, I got your back. I don't care who you are, even James Harden, I got your back. And to the 408 calling me a sellout, sir, I don't appreciate that. And you know what?
What did he call you a sellout for? What are you talking about, Joe? What do you say that for?
Because I'm talking about supporting people when they're down there trying hard. That I'm not going to rip some of these guys just because they might have an off night. If the Rockets are going to play hard down there, good for the Rockets. If the Lakers and Clippers and Bucks, and I don't see it happening with the Sixers, but if they're playing hard, then I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for everybody who's willing to put in the effort because we just want to watch some hoops. Do you know how glorious this could be? 16 days in a row of basketball, 14 of those days with games starting at 11:30 a.m. or earlier and running all day. It's like a mini bootleg March Madness that doesn't end, right? Like, this could be so much fun, and I'm not saying they have to be great. No one has to be great. Please just don't mail it in. Please don't make it look completely awful. Just put in some effort. You know, go out there, try to make a play here and there. I'm in. I'm in completely with all these guys. I'm supporting everybody.
I'm in as well, Joe. I'm just a little cautiously pessimistic about the level of intensity from some of these bottom feeders, especially what Lo is saying. I agree with you, Lo, as far as what percentage of players are like, yeah, let's go to Orlando for 3 months. I can't wait to be sequestered from my family. That number is extraordinarily low. So human nature, I'm afraid, is going to set in when you've got, you know, these guys will be down there for 3 weeks or 4 weeks before they even start playing games. The bubble fatigue is going to be such that I think it's going to be tougher for guys to get up for games with no fans, knowing that you're maybe the 11th seed in the West. I just don't have that much faith that the product is going to be that great. But, Joe, I'm going to get in your camp and just say any basketball is going to be good basketball. I'll take it.
Here's this, though. Remember this. We always talk about guys who don't want to go and possibly be there for 3 months. I can completely understand that. But right out of the gate, a month in, 6 teams are going home. 6 teams are going home right out of the gate. You got 22, but only 16 make the playoffs. So within a couple weeks, 6 are gone. And then within 2 more weeks, you're going to eliminate half the field in the first round of the playoffs. So you'll be down to 8. And by that point, once you cut down to 8 teams, those teams are all going to probably believe they have a chance to win it. So they're going to go out there and try to get something done. And at that point, I think we're in great shape. It's going to be tough to tell a team once they get to the final eight, if you're in the conference semis, hey, man, we win this series. We're right on the cusp of this thing, right on the cusp. I think that's the point where you have the buy-in. So you're going to be able to weed out. The first round is the round where you might have some crazy upsets for some teams who don't want to be there. That could be the Utah team that's like, look, we don't want to win this thing. It's like South Park when the kids are playing baseball in the summer. And Randy Marsh is always fighting all the dads in the stands. And the kids hate baseball, so they just want to lose so the season ends. But they keep winning and they keep advancing and they're losing their whole summer. That's what I think the Jazz are going to do. It's possible that they go in and they just want to lose so they don't get stuck down there for an extended period of time. But I think all those teams will be weeded out by the end of the first round. And by that point, the novelty could be wearing off. But if it's wearing off at that point and that's when the really competitive stuff kicks in, I think we're good. I think we're good. The teams that are going to be there for 3 months, those are the teams that are truly competing for a championship. So ultimately near the end, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal for them. At least that's what I hope. I'm going in optimistic. Your cautious pessimism, it's needed. And to be honest, it's probably more accurate than where I'm at. I just like the fact of going into this positive. I think there's an opportunity here. I just don't want to see COVID derail the whole thing. Right? I'd rather get the bad basketball than COVID just knock the whole thing off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah, go ahead, Lo.
No, I'm with you. I don't want COVID to knock this off. I mean, that's why we're sitting here and we're trying to talk about sports because of the fact that, man, we miss them. And not just that, but we want to get them back. There's a lot of unsolved things. There's a lot of things that needs to be solved. NBA title. Who's going to be, you know, win the MLB, you know, talking about baseball. Who's going to win that title? Who's going to win the football? And there's a lot of things out there that's out in the balance. Even there's a lot of hockey fans waiting for that to get going. So there's a lot of things that are a lot of unrest with sports. So we do want to see these guys go out there. We want to see them compete. We don't want to see guys, okay, they've been off a couple months and they're just saying, okay, I'm just going to go out here because I got to go do that. No, we want to watch it because of the fact, the athletic ability and the skill sets that these men have. Hopefully, Dibs, what you're saying, hopefully that won't take place. I understand you're absolutely right. There are some bad teams that are there, but hopefully they go out there and say, man, I'm going to compete. I'm going to put on a show. I'm going to give it everything that I got because you know what? It's going to be different circumstances. I think that the ratings are going to be high. They're going to be able to showcase their things. I think it helped build characters. So I hopefully these guys, when they come back, all these teams, when they come back, hopefully even the worst teams, they compete and compete at a high level. And that's what all I want to see.
Yeah, I think, Joe, you lay out a good scenario of what happens when you get down to just eight teams, because then you'll have that'll be 14 teams that will have gone home. And you would imagine that the teams that are remaining will feel like, hey, we've got a real chance to do this, especially if it's someone like New Orleans or a Utah, a place that's never won the championship before. And you sit in that situation like, whoa, we may be able to actually do something special here. And then the other thing, Lo, that I think is going to take center stage, and I'm glad of it early on, is the Black Lives Matter movement. And they're talking about letting players individualize on their jerseys, messages, positive about, you know, social justice and all that. And there'll be some emblematic stuff on the court. And so I think even if the basketball is not necessarily at the highest level early on, the attention is going to be on the games in part because of all the players pulling together for the movement.
I'm glad you brought that up as well, because they are trying to do everything they can. Black Lives Matter will be on the court, and then you can replace your name on your jersey with a slogan if you want in some way, shape, or form. I don't think you can say anything if anyone's trying to get cute in some regard with some sort of joke or something like that. But for the most part, I think you're going to be able to. Because aren't we seeing that in the EPL and in soccer? Aren't they putting slogans and stuff on the back? Or is it just Black Lives Matter across all of the kits?
It was Black Lives Matter in the opening weekend, and now all of the kits have a patch on them, and there's also some Black Lives Matter signage in the stadium. And apologies to the dear listeners. Yesterday's lock was a loss. Burnley 1, Crystal Palace 0.
Shake it off.
The draw did not come home to roost. But more locks, Joe, later today as I continue to run hotter than an Alaskan winter.
I don't care if you call it locks. Why don't you stop calling it locks and just say, I'm going to give you some garbage picks. I mean,
perhaps you could react to the hilarity of an Alaskan winter when I self-deprecatingly indicated that I'm hotter than an Alaskan winter. So instead of pouncing, maybe reflect on the geoclimatological humor that I offered up.
I mentioned yesterday.
Hold on, a few different things. Number one, are there games today? Because I looked at the schedule, I didn't see anything. Because I wanted to put that in for the end of the show, but it didn't look like there were any games. Now, I only put about 90 seconds into this, so it's possible I missed. But do we have EPL games today?
I thought so. Let me just check real quick as I try to shake off Lowe's just unbelievable.
See, this is the problem. This is why you don't pick winners. You don't even know if there's a schedule.
Exactly.
You got to get organized, son.
Get organized, son. My goodness. You just start hollering, hot mouthing.
Yeah, don't even Brighton know. Is hosting Manchester United, Joseph, 12:15.
Okay.
Brighton and Man U. And then we've got four games tomorrow, two on Thursday. And Lowe, you're such a big talker, Betty Crocker. Why don't you bet against me? Why don't you try and fade the Dibber, tough guy?
Yeah, probably will.
Why not? Exactly. I'm like,
Ricketts and cowardice. Why not? This is the only thing we got coming from the Moo right now.
Hey, Coach, I'm fading you. I'm going to ride with – you know what? I'm changing. I'm riding with Steven. Steven took you out behind the woodshed and pulled your pants down and spanked your little white booty. So we remember what happened there. So, yes, I'm fading you.
Nice guy. Why'd you have to do that? Why'd you have to spank his little white booty?
And talked about it, too, and brought him on air and just tried to jump all down his throat with it. You remember that.
All right, 9:45 today. 9:45 today, EPL locks. All right, Dibs is going to have a pick for the game. Nice guy's going to be brought in as well. Lowe might be going the other way. We don't know, but we'll find out. Apparently, everyone's got locks for these English Premier League games, so we'll do that at 9:45. From the 760 on the Chilton Auto Body text line, which is the same number as the phone number if you want to call in, 888-957-9570. Hey, Joe, does Vegas have a bet for an incomplete season? That's where I'd be putting my money. I don't know is the truthful answer, and also I hope not. That's bad mojo, man. That's bad mojo. Don't be betting that the season doesn't get played. You don't want to put that out in the universe. Now, if it's an emotional hedge, you're betting on that so that you make some money in the event it all collapses because you so desperately want to see basketball, I can understand that. I've bet against my own teams before in big playoff games just so that in the event the team breaks my heart, I end up making some money out of it. So if it's an emotional hedge, I get it. But if you're just doing that because you think that's what's going to happen, that's bad mojo right there. So please don't do that. Speaking of bad mojo, Don Van Natta Jr., ESPN, Manti Te'o and his girlfriend Hoax are going to be the subject of ESPN's next backstory. So it's a new series ESPN is running. They just had one over the past weekend of LeBron and the decision and the backstory of the decision. It's pretty good. If you haven't seen it, I suggest you check it out. The next one's going to be about Manti Te'o. For those of you who don't remember, the star linebacker at Notre Dame who got catfished, and the story broke like right before or right after the national championship when Notre Dame got waxed by Alabama. The story was bizarre. I don't know if we need to go down this lane again. Wasn't this really just a kid getting humiliated? And it's just kind of sad, and yet everyone had an opinion on this. Like, this coming to light is embarrassing in itself. Do we really need a backstory on this guy getting catfished by Tui Asisopo's younger brother?
Yes, we do, Joe. And we need to find out the whereabouts of Lene Kukuia, which was the alleged imaginary woman. Of course I do, Joe, because when that story broke, it was just an absolute... It was absolute radio gold, is what it was, because, yeah, the young man got duped, but... Just the whole idea of the imaginary girlfriend and the number of conversations. And it'll be interesting in backstory to go back and talk to Manti Te'o. And really, props to the young man for being able to fight through that and have a pretty productive NFL career so far. I don't think he's made any Pro Bowls or he's not an All-Pro, but he's been a solid player in the National Football League. So I think that the ending of the story is good enough to where you can go ahead and go back and look at it, and maybe it'll serve as a cautionary tale for young linebackers everywhere.
Lo, what are you thinking? I'm sure you remember hearing this story. Like, that's got to be tough on this guy. It's all being aired publicly, and then when you get to a locker room, I'm sure you're going to be the subject of some dudes busting your chops.
Oh, no question. I remember that story like yesterday. I did feel sorry for the young fella at the time. Guy gets catfished. He thinks he's got a hot little gal, and he's, you know, talking about it, and it goes to tell you that the dude is just out there just getting hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, and only in America. And, you know, he bounced back, and like Dib said, the guy's having, you know, if he's still hanging around, that's good for him. But it was, man, it was a sad ordeal. Am I interested in watching it? I don't think so. I mean, I thought it was enough when I got to see it live, live and personal. But I don't think that I'm going to go ahead and watch this on ESPN.
See, this is where we're at now. We love the fact, the Nice Guy was talking about this on his show in the build-up to us at 6 o'clock. The idea that we're filming other people looking
misery.
Like idiots and making
yes.
mistakes so that we can post it and get and go viral. And that we can get likes and followers and comments and retweets and all this stuff simply by sitting around filming other people making mistakes. Like, I get the people that are filming the Karens who are going nuts in the grocery stores and the people who are refusing to wear masks. I mean, I get it. The guy, I mean, have you seen this the meme factory that is being produced from the guy and his wife in St. Louis that came out front, and the guy's holding the assault rifle and the woman's got mustard on her shirt. She's pointing a gun at all these people marching through. Because, Lo, did you see this?
I did not.
Okay, so someone's going to have to send you a link so you can see a picture. So I'm trying to give you the best version of the backstory I can. There was a Black Lives Matter protest in St. Louis over the weekend. And they were walking down a street. And apparently what happened is there's this gated community that the protest went into. And the protest clearly should not have gone in there. All right? Like that, if it's gated for a reason, you shouldn't just be going wherever you want because that's where issues are going to start to occur. Possible trespassing, right? So it goes through and it starts walking down this private street in this gated community. And there's this really nice house. And this guy and his wife come out front. And the guy is in this like pink polo shirt tucked into his khaki pants, little overweight. And he's just holding an assault rifle, like sitting there guarding his house. His wife comes out. She's got mustard stains on her shirt. Everyone is zoomed in on these people as they just mock the heck out of them. And she's got a handgun. She's pointing at everyone. And these people have gone viral because they were, of course, worried that something was going to happen to their property. But it's such a ridiculous scene to see them out front holding these guns like this. Just that's where we are in 2020. Like, that's everywhere now. There's memes everywhere. Memes everywhere. I don't know what to make of it. You got to look it up so you can comment on it at some point. But I don't know. That's the stuff going viral. The woman who can't fill up her gas tank properly, we're going to film that. We're going to send that out viral. Manti Te'o gets catfished, and we're all going to make that the number one story in the country. I just felt bad for that kid. Like, people were trying to allude that, like, there was some conspiracy going on. He was trying to trick people. He wasn't doing anything. He just turned out to be some kid who got tricked. It's really sad. You talked about that on radio quite a bit, huh?
Oh, yeah, and I was kind of in the camp of, you know, maybe if you have a player of this level of naivete, maybe you question his ability to be a professional. Because, honestly, if you're going to go that deep with a girl you've never met, the point I was making at the time was that might be a character flaw that would lead me to think twice about drafting the young man.
Wow, Dibs. I mean,
too much analysis for you, Lo? Should I come in milk toast and throw you some weak sauce lob?
I think the Chargers
made a good selection there.
Tibbs, that's not what I was saying. I mean, for you to say, you know what, for you to say, hey, the Chargers are naive, and here, if you can't get a guy, if this guy's this way naive, maybe you shouldn't draft him if he's that.
Go, Chargers, go!
You've been there. We've all been there where we've gotten duped before. I mean, you get a couple of letters sent to you, you decide to drive across the damn country to Vermont. It's not that it's just not naive.
That's a popular one for you. You really like going to that one.
I mean, yeah, but I didn't drive across the country. I just drove across the Northeast, and I slid on many sports talk radio draft boards as a result of that. These are things that you don't know, Lo, because you weren't in this market back in the early aughts in the late 90s.
Just stop, man. You did not slide off a board. That means
I slid
further
than you slid in 1993.
I mean,
really? You popped him for Vermont. You had to figure he was going to come back with something
there. But mine was in content. Here's the deal. Think about what going on. And he said, well, they should have known. If you're that naive, maybe you shouldn't be in the league. People have made naive mistakes, and I was just pointing out that Dibs was a young man when it happened. He was a young man when it happened. That's all I'm saying. So, and for you to be so hard on the guy when you've been in the same type of boat, that's the only thing that I was kind of making the correlation.
I was projected as a first-round traffic guy, and I slid to fourth-round weather. So there you have it.
I'm done with you, man. I can't stand you, Dibs.
I'm done with you.
They went so deep on Manti Te'o when all that was happening. Like, that story broke. I think it was Deadspin that had the original story. I'm not positive. And everyone was diving into it and looking at it from every possible angle of what this could mean about him and what it could mean about the school. And you're right. Like, what kind of person is he? And when you kept thinking that people were trying to sell it, that he was doing something deceitful. I remember there being this angle before we had all the details that, you know, he may have had something going on and he was trying to keep it from people. And could this guy be trusted? And then it just turned out he was just some poor kid who thought he met a girl online.
That was
his girlfriend. And like, someone was just messing with him, which once you find out the truth on its own, that's, I'm not going to say punishment enough, but like, that's enough. Like, you're going to have to deal with that heartache. And the fact that you were tricked and lied to like that, and then it becomes a national story where everyone's talking about whether or not you can be a football player because of that.
Right.
Although I wouldn't want to be in an NFL locker room after doing that. You got to feed there's going to be a couple biased comments on that one.
But how many people get catfish and people do it all the time, think someone's internet and they think they're talking to some gal, they got some face picture of them and some other girl's body. I mean, I watch that friggin' show, Catfish.
I do
you
too,
see it
Coach.
Happen all the time, Dibs.
Yes,
Coach, you see it all
the time.
None of
those individuals are cut from the NFL cloth, which is what made this so unique, because you watch some of those people on that show, on the MTV show Catfish. I don't think any of them are ticketed to the NFL, quite frankly.
That show pops on in my house every now and again. Enough of that. We don't have time for that.
My youngest and I will watch it every now and again just to, you know, to see the heartache.
It's been on for so long.
Yeah.
And like, that dude, is the guy who hosts that, is he really doing any good? Is he helping anybody? Because that's how he sells himself. Like, he's some noble hero who's out there helping everyone in their lives. Is he really helping? I'm not saying he's not. I'm just curious as to whether or not he's actually performing the public good that he claims he's doing. Plus, I'm sure he's probably pretty well compensated for doing this show, which has been on for so long. So if you're out there making money on everyone else's heartache by exposing these people, I could argue you're just as bad as the people who are doing it. Oh, you know, we're going to get to the bottom of this for you. Why? So that I watch the next 15 minutes and you get that quarter hour, and as a result, you get your bonus. Congratulations, Nev. Not happening.
And you're absolutely right, Joe. And Dibs, I'm going to tell you, it happens. I was at Fresno State. And I remember they had this Greek fest, and they would have it up here at San Jose and at Berkeley, and then have, you remember they had the little deal where in the step show and all the stuff.
Yeah, fraternities and sororities.
Let's go ahead and tease this for the next break. I hate to interrupt you.
Okay.
Nice guy's in my ear. He's yelling at me. So if you have a problem, you got to take it up with him. What's coming up in the game brought to you by Harris Ranch Beef Company. Lowe's going to pay off this Greek fest story, and we've also got World Series champ Tommy Glavine on the other side. These guys that are pulling out of the baseball season, this is only going to get worse before it gets better. Joe Lowe and Dibs back in a flash here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs.
Well, think about it.
I don't understand it.
On 95.7 The Game.
All right, boys and girls, welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you, our Tuesday-bound listening audience, because we love you, because we have a lot to get to over the next hour. Money Spot, as always, brought to you by our friends at O'Donnell Financial Group. Survive before you can thrive. Call the O'Donnell Financial Group today and let them help you thrive. Let's go to the phones. Hall of Famer, World Series champion, two-time Cy Young Award winner, the great Tom Glavine, joining Joe Lowe and Dibs, on 95.7 The Game. Tom, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for jumping on the show. Let's start with the big news out of baseball yesterday. The floodgates have opened. Mike Leake in Arizona, Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross in Washington, and Ian Desmond in Colorado have all opted out of the 2020 Major League Baseball season. Do you think this is just the beginning? How many more players ultimately are going to decide this is not for them?
I would venture to say those aren't going to be the only guys. You know, I think we've all kind of talked about the possibility of this happening, but I think in particular there are a handful of guys in baseball that we know have had some issues, pre-existing conditions. A couple of guys have battled cancer and things of that nature. So you figured those guys At a minimum, we're going to be guys that were going to be iffy, and you wouldn't be surprised if at all that they opted out. You know, so with some of these guys not knowing exactly, you know, what is behind their reasoning for not playing, you know, I think you would have to suspect, given that there's going to be some more guys, but I, you know, I'd have to expect too that Major League Baseball, the Players Association, they had to have had some of these conversations. They had to know that some guys were going to opt out, and they had to have plans in place, assuming that this was going to happen.
As a former player and a teammate, how would you react if a small handful of your teammates decided to not want to go? And maybe they didn't have a clear-cut pre-existing condition if maybe they just didn't want to go through and do this. Would there be some player backlash, you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think it depends, right? Because, I mean, I think there, again, you don't know the underlying circumstances. Right now, you might, again, we just talked about, some guys that have pre-existing conditions. You might have a guy who doesn't necessarily have a pre-existing condition, but somebody in his family does, or he's fearful of somebody in his family. So I think that would be the first thing that I would want to know as a teammate. There has been some talk, at least things that I've seen and read, where guys have questioned whether or not a 60-game season is worth going back and playing for. If I had a teammate coming down along those lines and I was willing to go out there and play for 60 games or 40 games or 70 games or whatever it was, then yeah, I'd probably be a little bit annoyed by that. Would it be a long-term annoyance? I don't know. I think it would require a conversation for sure. But look, everybody has their reasons and you know, there's no, in this situation, there's no saying, hey, you're right or you're wrong. That doesn't mean, as a teammate, maybe necessarily you have to agree with somebody's decision, but you know, you can't. It's just the kind of thing where you can't sit here and just definitively say, "Hey, well, you're wrong with that decision." I mean, it's everybody feels differently about it.
No question. Where did baseball go wrong in this negotiation on both sides, and what's going to be the healing process, especially for the fans?
I think that was twofold. Number one, it was probably too much about economics. And number two, it was too public. You know, I think that, you know, going back to my experiences as a player rep and having gone through the strike and a lockout in 1990, you know, inevitably it's always about economics to some extent. You know, inevitably some of it is going to get in the newspaper, and a lot of that is just posturing and, you know, people trying to maybe assert pressure on the other side if they're winning the PR battle and things of that nature. So, you know, some of that's going to happen. But I think in this case, where this is such a unique circumstance, I thought it got a little bit too public. And I think it got a little bit too public concerning economics in a situation where people, to be perfectly honest with you, didn't want to hear it. You know, when you have a country that's been shut down, you have people who are in many instances losing their life savings, and then you have players and owners haggling over millions of dollars, people can't relate to that, and it turns people off, and I don't blame them. So I think that was probably the two big mistakes that both sides made. Now, again, it was inevitable that they were going to argue over money. I think they could have done a better job of keeping it out of the newspapers. At least the, you know, the back and forth between the two sides, you know, proposals are always going to be public, obviously. But the reaction to those proposals maybe didn't have to be so public and so, acrimonious, but, you know, it's something that you learn from. And I think that, yeah, there's going to be a percentage of people that are probably turned off or were turned off by it. But I think assuming this thing goes forward and we end up having baseball, I think once baseball is back and people are watching games and you're able to sit home now after dinner at night and turn on a ball game and not have to watch, you know, reruns or things of that nature, then I think people's animosity will dwindle to a large extent and people will get into the baseball season for what it is.
Two-time Cy Young Award winner Tom Glavine joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Two-part question for you regarding starting pitching. So we're going to have spring training 2.0, which is going to be nothing like what regular spring training is. And then when we start the season, how long, how deep into games do you think starters are going to go? And then the follow-up to that is going to be towards the end of the season, do you see teams shortening their rotation since this is a 60-game season and there's a lot that's going to be at stake for possibly a lot of teams versus a 162-game season where you weed out some of the batter teams earlier in the year?
Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be on the back end question. I think there's potentially going to be some adjusting, sure, because look, in a 60 game schedule, I'm not going to sit here and say that every team has a chance, but I think there are certainly more teams that are going to have a chance that realistically would not have had a chance in a 162 game schedule. I mean, that's the beauty, I guess, in some regards to the baseball season and the baseball schedule. Bad teams don't make it to the playoffs in a 162 game schedule. So it everything weeds itself out. Now in a 60 game schedule, it could be different. And I know, I'm sure you guys have talked about this. I'm sure you've seen it. I know I've talked about it. You know, you take a 60 game schedule from last year and the World Series champions don't make the playoffs. You know, Washington would not have made the playoffs last year under a 60 game scenario. So that goes to show you how important it's going to be, obviously, to get off to a good start. But given that 60 game sprint, you're going to have a team or two that are going to be maybe a surprise that wouldn't have been over the course of 162 games. Now, you know, I think for the way rotations are going to be structured, you know, I've seemed to read a lot of things to where teams are looking at their starting pitchers, you know, initially going 3 to 4 innings. And then maybe about 3 to 4 weeks into the season be to the point where, you know, they're ready to go out and have their full allotment. So, which, you know, I don't want this to sound like a knock on the game, but it's just the way the game is now. You know, we talk about starting pitchers and how limited they're going to be. Well, in today's game, most of those guys only go 5 or 6 innings anyway. So it's not like you're going to have to, you know, really build these guys up to get to that point where they're going to go 7, 8, or 9 innings. I mean, that doesn't happen a lot in today's game anymore. So I think initially baseball is going to look a lot like, on a consistent nightly basis early on, a lot like what we saw a handful of times last year with teams, particularly, I guess, from what I remember is Tampa Bay, using the opener. You know, the starting pitcher now early on is almost going to be like the opener. He's going to go out there, he's going to go 3 innings, and then they're going to turn it over to the bullpen, and you know, it's going to put so much importance on how teams structure their bullpen, who those extra arms are that they carry, that they're allowed to carry. So there's going to be some finagling with that, but I do think you're right. On the back end, you may see some teams, you know, shorten their rotations, and I think, again, obviously my sweet spot, the Braves, you look at the team like the Braves, it's probably one of those things that could be beneficial to them because they've got at least 3 young guys in their rotation that in a 60 game schedule, they don't have to worry about their workload on the back end. So there's going to be no limitation on those guys on the back end. Whereas in a 162 game schedule, I can promise you they would have been worried about the innings load come September.
You mentioned innings and starting pitchers, and you're a member of the 300 win club, and we may not ever see another pitcher get 300 wins for his career. Do you see a time where maybe they change the qualifications for a win down to 4 innings in light of the fact that pitchers just don't go that deep anymore?
I hope not. I mean, I hope we don't start changing the statistics to, what's the word I'm looking for? To, you know, cover up mediocrity, you know, right. I mean, look at if to me, you don't have a lot of guys in today's game that are going 6, 7, 8 innings. You have some, and those guys are really good. And those guys should be noted as being really good. I mean, you take the Jake DeGrom, you take Scherzer and Kershaw and those guys are really good. And I don't think you should water down what other guys are doing because they're not capable of going out there and doing what the great guys are doing. So, I mean, that's just my opinion. So
sure.
I hope not. I hope they don't start to do. I mean, I know people are always talking about trying to reevaluate starting pitchers and you know, what truly tells a starting pitcher's value and things of that nature. I mean, I know the wins and losses are harder to come by now. Because of the way bullpens are used and, you know, guys aren't aren't allowed to go out there, so to speak, in the sixth or seventh inning in a one-run game or a tie game anymore. They turn games over to relievers. So, you know, there's a handful of games that are lost there. Guys don't make 36 starts anymore like we used to. So, I mean, all those things factor in. But, you know, I just don't think that you should then start to weed down how you statistically measure guys to try to accommodate that mediocrity, so to speak. You know, I mean, if you can't go out there and go five innings to win a game, then you shouldn't deserve to win a game.
Right. Understood. And when you're talking about you said, hey, maybe 60 games or 70 games is not enough and bad teams have a chance now to get in. And you talked about last year, the first 60 games, the team who won the title would have not won it. Is there ever a time when you say too many games? If you had a perfect number, if you were the commish, you know, what would be a perfect number? Do you think that what baseball needs to have amount of games to still get a true winner and a true champion?
I mean, you know, I think for me, I'm very much open to the discussion of shortening the season and adding to the playoffs. You know, I know that's been talked about for a lot of years. I know the purists in the game probably hate that, but, you know, the purists in the game hated the wild card, too, and the wild card has been pretty good for baseball, and the wild card play-in game has been pretty good. You know, it's anything you can do to add excitement to teams and cities late in the year that maybe otherwise wouldn't have it, I don't think is a bad thing. Now, I'm not saying you want to open it up to, you know, as many teams as, say, the NHL or the NBA does. But, you know, I would certainly be open to shortening the schedule to probably, you know, when you hear about adding another tier of playoffs, the number that everybody seems to come up with that makes the most sense is like 154 games. I'd be fine with that and add an extra round of playoffs. You know, but I don't know that, you know, short of, say, changing the playoff structure, I don't know that there's a number I would have in my mind that I would say, hey, this is the sweet spot, right? I mean, there are people that will argue 162 game schedule is too long, and you know, that's where baseball has a hard time holding TV viewership or attendance or things of that nature, because there's a game every night, and you know, you don't have the you know, the same situation, say, as the NFL where it's one a week, or NBA and the NHL where it's maybe two games a week. But at the same time, I think that's part of the allure of baseball, too. I mean, it's, you know, it is a war of attrition, and you got to do a lot of things to survive over that length of schedule. But, I mean, again, I would be open-minded to shorten it by, you know, a few games and adding a, you know, a true maybe 3 out of 5 extra round of the playoffs. I'd be fine by that.
Tom Glavine joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Tom, final question for you, and I'm asking strictly from a personal gambling perspective, but given that it's a 60-game season and given that starters may not work deep into games early in the season, is it possible that this year could feature a higher probability where a closer wins a Cy Young Award? You've won 2 Cy Young Awards. I'm thinking to myself, with the way this could play out, you could get a guy with 20 saves. He could have a low ERA. He could grab a few wins. We're not going to see a starter put up a 14-2 record this season. So do you think maybe there's a little bit of value in looking to closers to win the Cy Young this year?
You know, I hadn't thought about it, but it's an interesting question. And I would have to say off the top of my head, I agree with you, because you're not going to have starting pitchers have the kind of numbers that you're accustomed to seeing starting pitchers have, right? So in a 60-game schedule, you know, if you have a 5-man rotation, your starter is going to be, you know, lucky, I guess, if all goes well, they're going to get 12 starts somewhere in there, right? So, you know, the likelihood that somebody's going to go out there and, you know, have a bunch of wins, particularly where, and I don't know if this is the case or not, so if I'm wrong, forgive me, but particularly where if they haven't changed the rules initially for the starting pitchers to qualify for a win where they have to go 5 innings early in the season, then you got to figure that at least 2 of those starts for starting pitchers are going to be lost in terms of factoring into a win, because they're not going to be able to go enough innings anyway. So, you know, now you're down to 10 starts or 9 starts, depending on how long it takes a guy to get built up to get to 5 innings. So, yeah, I see a team that has a strong bullpen that they can utilize, and particularly a frontline closer on the back end, that absolutely you could see a guy, you know, get a bunch of saves in a situation like that and certainly put himself in contention for the Cy Young Award. I could see that happening for sure.
Hall of Famer, World Series champ, two-time Cy Young Award winner himself, Tom Glavine, kind enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Tom, we always appreciate the time. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
All right, you're welcome. You guys have a good day.
You as well, Tom, you as well. Today's show brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking and no compromises. I'm just going to throw it out there. First sports book I looked at, Liam Hendricks is 70-1. Josh Hader from the Brewers, 50-1 to win the Cy Young Award. Think about what the voters look at. I'm not big on wins when it comes to pitchers. I've made that case for years, but voters don't agree necessarily. Guy goes 12-2. People think that's really impressive. ERA is 5, and he's getting tons of run support every time out. Hey, he's still 12-2. Look at him. Fine, whatever. You're not going to have that this year. Like Glavin said, at best, you're making, what, 12 starts over the course of the season. You're going to have a few games in there where you don't have your best stuff. You're going to have a few games where you probably don't make it 5 full innings, so you can't qualify anyway. You're going to have a few games where you pitch great, but you end up losing. You're not going to have a guy going 18-4. Right? So now all of a sudden, here come the closers who can pick up wins. Here are the guys who could easily pick up 20 saves, and you could rack up a low ERA and put yourself in great position. There are some long odds on some great closers. I'm just saying, Dibs, if you want to take a shot, if anyone's looking for a lottery ticket, perhaps look to the closers to win the Cy Young this year.
I think it's genius because you mention it. When you look at eye-popping numbers in the Cy Young race, if a pitcher wins 20 games, they're probably going to win the Cy Young, especially in modern days where almost nobody wins 20 anymore, even though wins are not the end-all, be-all of stats. But if you get a short season like this and you've got a pitcher like Liam Hendricks, let's just say he winds up 2-0 with 21 saves and a 0.88 ERA and a whip, a cool whip. Of about 0.9, all of a sudden you got eye-popping numbers. And for a team, by the way, that wins, that all would lead to be a strong candidate for the Cy Young, and 70-1 and 50-1, those are some great odds on closers, Joe. That was a solid question for Glavine, and he agreed with you.
I think you can even find better odds. This was just the first place I looked. I think there are places where if you shop, you can get a guy like Hendricks and Hader at even better prices. Yesterday, baseball made a lot of news because the first wave of veterans started announcing that they would be opting out of the 2020 season once it gets going at the end of July. It started with Arizona Diamondbacks starting pitcher, former Giants pitcher Mike Leake. He's 32 years old. He was going to make $16 million for a full season. His prorated amount was $5.55 million. He was headed for free agency next year. He decided, you know what? Pass. I don't want to play. He's one of the guys where you didn't get a great reason why. Some guys gave reasons, some didn't. Leake didn't really give a reason. There's an $18 million club option for Mike Leake next year, but there's also a $5 million buyout. So Arizona likely lets him go. They won't pick up the option, but he is going to get $5 million in a buyout. And Leake has made $95 million in his career, so he's decided, it's not for me. He was going to be a back-end starter at best in the Diamondback rotation. Later in the day, the news came out of Washington where the defending champs are going to lose two guys. Ryan Zimmerman, who was the first draft pick in Nationals history once the organization relocated from Montreal to Washington. He's 35 years of age. He's out due to health reasons. He has a three-week-old baby, and his mother has multiple sclerosis. Now, he is scheduled to play on a one-year, $2 million deal. That's not prorated. He was only going to get $2 million. The Nats had declined his $18 million club option last year, so he wasn't scheduled to make much. Because of the mother's health and because he's got a new baby, he just won a World Series. He's made a lot of money in his career. He's deciding, I'm out for the season. Pitcher Joe Ross is out as well. 27 years old. He's been in the league 5 years, had Tommy John surgery in 2017. Last year with the Nats, he was 4-4 in 27 games, 5.48 ERA. He was scheduled to make $1.5 million for a full season this year because he was an arbitration player. So that's what ARB declared he was worth, $1.5 million. He's out. And then the biggest one of the day came in the afternoon. Colorado outfielder Ian Desmond, 34 years old, he's out. He's got a pregnant wife, and he's got four young kids at home. He's a two-time All-Star. He's been in the league 11 seasons, the past three of which have been with the Rockies. Last year hit 255 with 20 home runs and 65 RBIs. Now, prorated, he was due to make $5.55 million. He's on a five-year, $70 million contract with the Rockies. In his career, he's made $76 million. Desmond had a very, very lengthy Instagram post, which was four or five pictures long, in which he addressed the reasons why he's not going to play. I'm going to read the first page of this, and then I'm going to read another segment of this, but I'm not going to do the whole thing, just to give you perspective. Ian Desmond, quote, "A few weeks ago, I told the social media world a little bit about me that I never talk about. I started it by saying why that was. I don't like sadness and anger. I found an even keel allowed me to move through my days with more ease than emotion did, so I kept it inside. But that comes at an internal cost, and I could no longer keep a lid on what I was feeling. The image of Officer Derek Chauvin's knee in the neck of George Floyd, the gruesome murder of a black man in the street at the hands of a police officer, broke my coping mechanism. Suppressing my emotions became impossible. In the days since I began sharing my thoughts and experiences as a biracial man in America, I've received many requests to elaborate, but it's hard to know where to begin. And in truth, there's a lot on my mind. Here's some of it." And it goes on for, I suggest you read it on your own. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I want to take one more point that comes a little bit later in the post. Quote, "If what Dick Lee knew to be true remains so, that baseball is about passing on what we've learned to those who come after us in hopes of bettering the future for others, then it seems to me that America's pastime is failing to do what it could, just like the country it entertains. Think about it. Right now in baseball, we've got a labor war. We've got rampant individualism on the field. In clubhouses, we've got racist, sexist, homophobic jokes, or flat-out problems. We've got cheating. We've got a minority issue from the top down. One African-American general manager, two African-American managers, less than 8% black players, no black majority team owners. Perhaps most disheartening of all is a puzzling lack of focus on understanding how to change those numbers, a lack of focus on making baseball accessible and possible for all kids, not just those who are privileged enough to afford it. If baseball is America's pastime, maybe it's never been a more fitting one than now." That is Ian Desmond, Colorado Rockies outfielder, discussing in part his reasons why he will not play baseball this season. Again, pregnant wife with four kids at home, so he's got that concern. And based on everything going on in America, he wants to make it very clear he's got issues with that and baseball as well. So, Lo, you hear that. Mike Leake not going to play. Zimmerman not going to play because of health. Then there's Desmond, who's taking somewhat of a political stance as well. How does that hit with you? Do you think more baseball players might end up siding with Ian Desmond here?
There's a strong possibility that there will be players that decide, you know, stand with him. And you see what Kyrie was trying to do with basketball, and players, a lot of people came out and said, hey, look, you got more of a platform. And you, Dibs alluded to it earlier today in the show, that it is. They're going to have the Black Lives Matter. That's going to be a huge push. So it's going to be out there. It's going to be out there. It's going to be out in front. So I think that sometimes, you know, whatever people decide to do, but sometimes to participate, to get your message out there with a more consistent basis, is sometimes to play and to be a part of it. But, you know, he's got four kids and his wife's pregnant. So, you know, I think that, it, you know, so staying home with his family is probably the best for him at this time. And, you know, him also saying that, hey, this is another reason why that I'm not going to go. I can understand that. And I think that people can understand that and respect that. About other players, will they do it? There could be a strong, a lot of other players that just say, hey, I don't want to go. Don't want to, you know, I have some pre-existing issues. My family's more important. So I could see more baseball players, especially no one really got what they desired. So it wouldn't shock me if more baseball players decided to opt out.
It's just fascinating the way he approached it, because he touched on the medical aspect with his family, his four kids, right, his pregnant wife, but also the social aspect of it, Lo. And just for him to be that revealing about what he was going through and about his feelings when he saw what happened to George Floyd was powerful. And then the third piece of it, which I think is really interesting going forward, is what he said about the clubhouse culture with homophobic jokes and racist jokes, and the clubhouse culture not being necessarily that open to what people are trying to do in society and how we're all trying to be better. And he even touched on the lack of representation from African Americans in the front office, and less than 8% of players in the league are black players now. And just the fact that he did it so eloquently, and it wasn't just, oh, my wife's pregnant, I'm out. It was a number of different things. And so even though he won't be playing, the way he brought up the issues I thought was perfect, and he came across as eloquent and very educated.
See, and we've seen this, John, in football. Oh, let's go say no real quick, Joe.
Take your time, please.
We've seen this in football, you know, that, you know, they talked about this, the Rooney Rule, and then it went further than the Rooney Rule, and me and Dibs and all of us would agree, and if you make a rule that's mandated that you hire a guy and you get 20 picks up, it made some of the blacks furious to say, now you're treating me, you're trying to give me something because of my color and my skin and because I'm a minority, you're forcing people to do that to get them more draft picks and to change it. I want this job because I'm smart enough, I'm intelligent enough, I can operate on a level just like everyone else can. And those are the things that you're hearing from individuals. And those things do need to be proportioned. You know, you look at a lot of these things that, and I think that even blacks have, you know, black, white, browns, all, everyone has changed. This is, I don't care if you are racist, either you become more of a racist, whether you didn't know what you were, it's starting to bring out feelings. Every single one of us have emotions out of all this stuff. It's brought emotions, some good, some bad, some for blacks, some against. I think a lot of blacks, everyone can't just agree. All whites don't just agree. All browns aren't just agreeing. So this issue has brought emotions out of everyone that we did not know was there. It's forced people to be uncomfortable. If you hold, you know, you look at history, it's forcing people to look at history. When you look at, you know, at the time in World War II or Vietnam.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.